honest, yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, so Kieran, it's great to be back. More than 7 months since we saw a bit of inter-county action. 223 days, to be precise. Not that I'm counting or I have a calendar on my wall at home here or anything like that. We're in for an absolute treat this weekend. We've 7 matches on television, loads more on GEA Go and that are being streamed. We've Armagh, Roscommon, Dublin, Meath, Galway, Mayo, Donegal, Tyrone and Kildare and Cavan. So, like, I mean, we're being absolutely spoiled. It's been a famine and now we're at feast time.
Yeah, look, you know, it's obviously been strange times and mad times, look, but, you know, it's we've got the club season. It's great to get back into that and whet the appetite. And now, as you said, look, it's something to really look forward to this weekend. It's the inter-county season kicking off again.
Yeah, so I was reading a quote from Jason Sherlock. He was doing some media yesterday, and he's obviously, as we know, out of the Dublin setup. And he was saying, if it was preparing for a National League game at the weekend, you're not just thinking of it from a football point of view and the logistics of where we meet for our pre-match meal. Now we have an additional layer involved of teams of that safety and protocols. I don't envy any of them. I'd say he doesn't envy any of them. Eddie Brennan, the Laois hurling manager, said that if this was his first year with a county, he would have pulled out long ago, that he kind of has a bond with them from last year. Like, I mean, you were involved with Mayo Bridge this year. You're with the Armagh under-17s. How hard is all of this?
Yeah, look, you know, it's tough. You know, I suppose go back to my experience at Mayo Bridge there, that has just ended there last week due to all club activity being cancelled. You know, suppose when we first initially got back together, like, you know, we obviously had to train in small groups of 10. You know, and you weren't allowed to do any ball work in at the early stages, so it was just, we were meeting up in 5 different groups. There's 50 of a squad between the first and second team, and we were just doing a running session for 40 minutes, and then gradually that progressed into football stuff on the pitch, you know. And, you know, it's probably from a management point of view and a player's perspective, you know, we did like a risk assessment of what our high chances it was of contracting the virus. You know, everybody has their own lives to live outside of football, between work and their careers, you know. So obviously they have to still take place. And then our risk assessment was done on what we can control outside of that, their environment, and, you know, and try to limit ourselves to that exposure and give us the best possible chance of competing and finishing off our season. And
yeah,
That's the platform we talk, you know, and it's stood us in good stead.
What do you think, like, there's going to be teams going all over the country, like Kerry are going to Monaghan, Longford are going to Derry, like there's some big long kind of journeys. What are the challenges going to be there? Because obviously, you know, we all know the routine. You get on the bus, everyone together, sit beside your buddy, stop off for a meal, you know, do a pre-match meeting maybe in the hotel that you have the meal, go on to the dressing room, tog out. Everybody kind of knows the routine, that's played at any level. Like, at this rate now, that's all just been ripped up.
Yeah, you know, I suppose now with the guidelines that Croke Park have sent out for each county, you know, is, you know, 2 buses have to be provided, 252-seater buses have to be provided for 26 players and 12 backroom team, you know, so, and then masks have to be worn on the bus. So obviously each player is going to have a seat of their own, but on the bus. And, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, you're dealing with, you know, elite players here that, you know, are going to be disciplined in what guidelines they have to follow and implement to give themselves the best chance of either getting promotion in the league in the coming weeks and giving them the best chance of putting a foot forward to make a stamp in the championship. And, yeah, you know, obviously there is protocols, and I think that, you know, the players in each county that's involved will police these to the minimum.
How did you find the dressing room dynamic? You didn't have a dressing room dynamic when you're with Mayo Bridge. You did everything in the stand or on the pitch, I presume. Inter-county teams will have dressing rooms this weekend, but they'll have 2 dressing rooms. So, your traditional team talk in the dressing room is going to be a lot more difficult again.
Yeah, you know, at club level is a lot harder. On a grand summer's evening, it's grand when there's no rain. But when you're trying to prepare and get messages across, and it lashing rain, and maybe a club pitch that doesn't have a stand to give you any shelter, it becomes that wee bit harder. But you try to relate all your key points and key messages on the last training session before the match, and then obviously you have a whiteboard at the pitch. And just have the key messages written on a whiteboard while the players can see and go over as they're doing their prep for a match. And then, in my eyes, we tried to focus on that all our work was done. And once we turned up for a match day, it was reinforcing them points that the players would see on the whiteboard and getting into a warm-up and straight into the match.
Right. Joey Wallace was on the show after scoring the winning goal for Atoll. He's obviously with Meath, and he was saying he much prefers the preparation outside on the pitch or in the stand, because he said the tension in the dressing room, he'd be a very relaxed sort of fella, and he says that the tension in the dressing room can be too much.
Yeah, I suppose every player's different. He must have some really strong character managers. I quite like the change room environment, because boys are relaxed. They can grab a seat, on the pitch, they're standing, and there's a lot of stuff going on around them, I suppose it's an individual thing for everybody, regards management and players and what they feel is best and what environment they like best. But it is what it is, and it's something that we have to just get on with at the present minute. And I'm sure over the next 2 weeks at the county level, players have been exposed at club level, so they know the trial and error process. They're probably going into that, and they'll be taking that advice and experience back into the county setup, and I think things will run smoothly enough over the next coming weeks for county setups.
Yeah. Do you think, just a final one of this, on match day, you make a good point that you get most of your talking done the last training sessions, where you have them all together rather than the day of a game. I often felt when I was playing under a good few different managers that there's too much talk on the day of a game. You could have three different meetings. The captain might talk then. A lot of it is repetition, and it seems that it's more that's what we've always done rather than is there the need for that much stuff on the actual match day?
No, I think things have changed in the last 10 years. A lot of it is player driven,
right?
From within each setup nowadays, and you can even see that at club level now. You're trying to give more players leadership and ownership of the whole situation, and you reinforce whatever points you need to do in the last training session, and it's all about just key points that you'd want to address on the match day. And the best thing to do for that is to limit the amount of talk on these match days is getting them on whiteboards. And when players are at that level now where they take responsibility and maybe go into their own wee groups of defenders and forwards and midfielders and goalkeepers and chat as individuals, and then maybe get one or two points across to each other from a perspective of a whole team. And the manager's jobs is limited at that stage. They've done whatever they need to do midweek at training.
Right. You're making me feel old now. It's 10 years since I was involved in that he set up. So look, a lot has changed since you've been playing, Wooly. So stop harping back to it. Come here, we have to talk about this John Heslin tweet quickly and the GPA survey, because I don't want to spend too much time on that. I think a lot of people might want to actually get away from constant COVID talk. We're fairly sure the games will go ahead this weekend, but John Heslin was tweeting. He said, at what stage does inter-county return badly needed in these grim days? Commentary end. I'm concerned from a health and welfare perspective, both individually and collectively, for those contributing to the inter-county season. That's obviously John Heslin's opinion. I see your own Stephen Campbell has tweeted something completely different in the last few minutes. He's been talking about really looking forward to the season going ahead. So again, John Heslin's tweet made huge headlines. I'm not sure Stephen Campbell's will make the same headlines, because for some reason, bad news is travelling an awful lot faster than good news in this whole thing. The GPA have sent a survey out to players. They've asked, in your opinion, is your county board effectively implementing the COVID-19 inter-county return to play protocols to ensure a safe training playing environment to you? That's a pretty good question, I think. At least county boards will have to shape up. And then they asked three questions after that. Do I want the season to proceed? Do I want to play only if the implementation of the COVID-19 protocols is improved? And three, I do not want the season to proceed. So I don't know, I've said a lot there, Kieran, for you to pick up on. I suppose there's no right or wrong answer for this based on which players are comfortable playing and which players might not be comfortable playing?
Yeah, look, you go back to John's tweet, you know, and it's, you know, it's probably a case of, you know, go back to the early stages of this year with Mayor Bridge. The first thing we asked each player when we met up was, this is an individual based decision. If you're not comfortable playing football in this environment at the present time, you know, feel free to step away. Nobody's holding the gun to your head to make you play. You know, and we did the same with Armagh on the 17th 5 weeks ago when we met the parents and the players one Saturday morning. We addressed the same message, was that, you know, if you're not comfortable with your kid playing in this environment at the current time, you know, there's, you know, we respect your decision if you want to pull your kid out of the under 17 in the county season. You know, and I think it boils down to...
And did anyone pull out as a matter of interest?
Yes, we had one player that opted out from the under 17 squad just due to the current situation and with grandparents and stuff like that there in the vulnerable age bracket. Yeah. And he just opted out of the under 17 panel, and you know, and you gotta respect that decision. And the door, we've said that the door's left wide open for him if that changes in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so I suppose it is important to ask players, and now the GPA are asking the players, like, what happens if the majority of players that respond to this survey say they don't want the season to go ahead? Like, I mean, is the GAA in kind of an untenable position at that stage?
Yeah, look, you know, it's, I suppose they had to come out. There's a lot of pressure coming online at the present minute from certain people, you know, and I suppose the question had to be asked, and you know, and then it's up to each player. As I said, it's going to be an individual basis, like, you know, whether players want to anticipate or not. And to be honest, you know, I think players will want to take part in participate in the competitions that's coming in the next number of weeks. Like.
Yeah, I think the same. And I always remember I dropped off an awful lot of county squads down through the years. And I always remember the one thing that hit me most was the amount of people you're letting down, and you know, the amount of people that follow you and your family and friends, and you're letting them down, and you have to deal with all that, and it's not easy to drop off a squad. But I don't think that situation is really here now for players, whereas if a player is uncomfortable and he says it's not for me this year, I don't think they would get all that pressure, would they, Kieran? Like, I mean, people would understand this year if you wanted to leave a squad, and you wouldn't be criticized maybe like, you know, I was back in the day.
Yeah, look, you know, we're in different circumstances at the minute. Like, you know, where 10 years ago, if you dropped off a county squad, it was nearly a crime.
Yeah.
You know, but in the current situation and climate we're in at the minute, you know, if players want to opt out over the next number of months, you know, I'm sure the manager will shake their hand, or probably can't shake their hand at the present minute, but, you know, they'll wish them well and tell them that the door's open for them next year when they feel right to come back in.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And there is a cluster report yesterday, in this is in the Republic of Ireland now, the stats are from. So there's 522 outbreaks in the previous 7 days. This is in the last week. 352 were in private households, 25 in schools, 7 in restaurants, cafes, 4 in pubs, and only 3 in sporting activity fitness. Now, that's spread across all sporting activity fitness. We don't even know if one of those, you know, apply to the GAA. So there is no doubt inter-county football is safe to play, right? And Gaelic footballers in the age bracket they're in are not in any way high risk, you know? So, like, I mean, it is safe. The big issue with GAA games is when it gets to provincial final level, Kieran, it's like the supporters will go mad and they'll be out celebrating in house parties. And that's where I think, to provide a bit of balance here, that's probably what the people who want to pull these games are looking at.
Yeah, we know from the stats that playing sports is a safe environment, you know, and, you know, we, Crow Park, have put out the guidelines, you know, no car sharing, no meetings, no eating together, you know, so all the stuff's in black and white for players and for county player for county boards, you know. And as you said, like, if a team happens to win in the provincial championship, you know, yes, you know, obviously supporters will celebrate it, like, you know, but if you're in that environment and you're out the following week in All Ireland quarter final, you're not going to have players going out celebrating winning a provincial championship in the present minute, you know. And if people want to throw house parties and celebrate it, you know, that's out of Crow Park's control. Like, you know, they can't control that there. That boils back down to individual responsibility, and, you know, and the only people that have control of that is the individual. Like, you know, and that's, that can't be fired at Croke Park, and can't be fired on these online, the online pressure that's on Croke Park at the present minute to pull the whole competition.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And look, if you have a house party after your team wins a provincial, your neighbours are going to squeal on you anyways, and you get a knock on the door at, with the, under the new guidelines. So, like, I mean, that, that probably has changed. Come here, we'll forget about that talk, and we'll talk about the football. So I don't know about you, but I actually had to kind of do like a revision of what the hell happened in the league. We've been we've been so far away from it. So Galway are top, I found out yesterday. I remembered yesterday. They've 8 points. Kerry on 7, Tyrone 6, Dublin 6, Donegal 5, Monaghan 5. Any of them are technically in the race. Mayo are on 3. They're in trouble, and Meath are relegated on 0. So Galway can win the league this weekend if they beat Mayo and Kerry lose to Donegal. Like, I mean, they've made 9 changes from their last game. I don't know what to make of this league, Kieran, in that it feels like the first 2 games of the league, but it's actually the last 2. And you know from playing, I hope it hasn't changed in the last 10 years, the last 2 league games always for us, the Laois, you get a week break before them, and they're treated almost like championship games. You're into the good weather. This is a complete kind of mix-up for players.
Yeah, definitely. As you said, you know, the last 2 league games, you're normally coming with a step in your prep, you know, because the bright evenings have arrived, the grass has got harder, you know, on a dry ball, and you're getting ready for championship. But things have changed. I still think that that buzz, that appetite will be still there, because, you know, these 2 matches in each division mean a lot to a lot of teams. And plus, it also leaves them in good stead and getting ready for the championship in 2.5 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time.
What did you make of McGuinness training Galway? We know it was just a one-off. Maybe it made nearly too many headlines, I suppose.
Yeah, look, I'm a big fan of Jim. I liked him when he was with Donegal, and I liked listening to him in Sky Sports and read his book, and enjoyed reading his articles in the paper weekly. You know, yeah, it's interesting. You know, we could be in doing stuff in behind the scenes on the mental approach towards the Galway team, because there has been that question over them this past number of years. We all know they have the players, they have the talent, but the question boiled down to were they mentally soft when it came to bit, and maybe that's what Jim could be in doing. And obviously, when he's there, they maybe expose him to doing an outfield pitch session at the weekend pass. But I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Jim is in there on a weekly basis working on their mental side of the game.
They had got meaner, to be fair, to Paddy Talley and Kevin Walsh. They had got meaner. They had got that kind of, you know, the perception that they were a bit soft. Maybe like you might see Kildare now, maybe, or someone like that. To be fair, Kevin Walsh had probably gotten that out of them.
Yeah, yes, Kevin took a bit of steel to them, and obviously Paddy was down coaching their defensive side of things, and they had that wee bit of a streak in them, like, you know. But, you know, then once they got to Croke Park, I felt that they're always found wanting again once they went to Croke Park. You know, maybe that's Jim's in to fix that side of things, because, you know, we obviously worked tremendous stuff with Donegal from, you know, remember back to 2010, we played Donegal in a qualifying match from Cross McGlen and beat them by 17 points.
Yeah.
And the following year, they're in an All-Ireland semi-final. And then the year after that, they won it, you know. And obviously, a lot of that there from chatting to the Donegal players, will be friendly still with Neil McGee. And, you know, he boiled down a lot of that to Jim McGuinness and his approach and his mental approach that he took to the Donegal squad back then.
Yeah, so there's no doubt if you can get Jim McGuinness in any capacity, you're doing fairly well. There's no Comer or Shane Walsh. Now, they're not 100% fit. What are teams going to do? Like, they've made 9 changes from their last game. Like, I mean, I wouldn't pay any attention to the last game because it's so long ago. But they're not at their first team. And we've talked about the last 2 league games being the 2 games where you pretty much want to be kind of settled on it, and not even settled on it, but you want them to have played those 2, you know, league games together, you know, to prepare for the championship.
Yeah, if you're trying to get, you know, your championship team out at the present minute, that would obviously have Comer and Shane Walsh in it, and they're not available this weekend and possibly the following weekend. Look, you know, on the flip side of that there, I see that as an opportunity of growing your squad and giving all the players an opportunity that might not get that chance if them 2 players are there. And we all know what Comer and Shane Walsh bring to the table for Galway. And I feel over the next week or two that, you know, give somebody else within the squad an opportunity to grow and develop. And that can only enhance and make the Galway team stronger come championship.
Yeah, they have Sligo on November the 7th. So, and then they have a Connacht final on November the 15th. So they still have a little bit of time, I suppose, to get those injuries cleared up. Pádraig Joyce is going to need to find a centre-back. John Daly's out. He has Johnny Dwan, who's played an awful lot in the in cornerback, out at centre-back. And, like, I mean, I was looking at Kieran Donaghy talking during the week, and he was suggesting Jack Barry should play centre-back for Kerry. He was saying, even though Peter Crowley's back, he was saying Jack Barry to centre-back. He suggested Sean O'Shea to midfield and Paddy Clifford to number 11. Now, I wouldn't agree with Sean O'Shea to midfield, but Jack Barry played centre-back a lot at underage level. And I was just thinking, geez, that might not be the worst idea, because Kerry are looking for a centre-back. Galway are looking for a regular centre-back. And then you look down through other counties and Mayo don't have a regular one. Donegal don't. Tyrone don't. Monaghan don't. Armagh don't. Roscommon don't. Dublin chop and change their centre-halfbacks since Keane O'Sullivan kind of wasn't a regular. And then I was wondering, what the hell is going on with traditional centre-backs here?
Obviously, I think the game has come a lot more dynamic. You know, obviously, you go back to 10 years from we were still playing. Like, you know, if you were the centre-back, it was you that held that role and organised and communicated. But now with the game being so dynamic, you know, that interchanges a lot. And it's having that flexibility within your squad and obviously that know-how of players dropping in and having that spatial awareness is more key than having a fixed a centre back at the present time, I think.
So that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I harp. Maybe I'm getting a little bit like Pat Spillan and Joe Brolly that harp back to when they were playing. But when I was coming up, you know, as a teenager watching it, it was Henry Downey, Glenn Ryan, Keith Barr, you know, Geezer, these traditional centre backs. And it just kind of happened without really noticing it. I'm looking down through all the top teams. And you're right, it is because it's more dynamic and you have a Johnny Cooper, someone that could easily slot into that position, you know, or you have a wing forward coming back then to do the maybe the covering job that traditional centre backs always had that instinct of whether to follow and whether to drop back. And maybe you don't need to have that specialised position anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, it's the game's become more dynamic, you know, and if the ball's coming down the right hand side of the pitch, you know, obviously that's the most dangerous side of the pitch in the at the present time. And it's up to the wing half back or the wing half forward on the left hand side of the pitch has got to drop in and provide that cover to shut out the danger zone on top of the D, you know, and that has to be come with a lot of flexibility. That if you have a player constantly sitting in that position, you become predictable. And it's easy for teams to pick you off and recycle the ball and control the ball. Where if you're pressing hard one side of the pitch and the opposite side of the pitch, there's nothing happening, that one of them players will drop in, you know. And I think that's the way a lot of teams are trying to operate at the minute, is having that flexibility and having that spatial awareness and of players that is not involved in that pressing of the game on the far side of the pitch.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting that it seems to be gone out of the game. You're talking about covering the top of the D there, and one of the best players to do that, Colin Kavanagh, he's gone. He's retired. He played the last league game against Dublin up in Omagh that Tyrone, when Tyrone beat Dublin. How big a loss is he going to be for Tyrone?
Yeah, he's going to be a massive loss, and you've seen some of the Tyrone players have come out there recently and talked about the gap that this one has to be filled from Colm. Like, you know, Colm was like a defensive midfielder that allowed to hold his own half back line and cornerbacks to attack at will. You know, and the minute they lost possession of the ball, like, he just turned and plonked himself on top of the D and to deny that early ball inside to the full forward line. And it also gave the half back line and other players in the pitch the freedom to go forward at will. And that's going to be a hard role to fill for Mickey Hart over the coming weeks and months.
Definitely. I had him on the show there a few weeks ago, and he was talking about, look, what I was asking him, had his role become harder the last couple of years as Tyrone have started maybe to match up a little bit more than go back zonal? And he said it was. Because, you know, in the last couple of years when he runs back when they don't have the ball, he's immediately leaving his man free, which is a lot more noticeable when you don't have those other zonal players.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and probably the most evident to really highlight that was Dublin.
Yeah.
Against them, you listen to some of the articles and interviews that some of the Dublin players got, and you know, when they said, you know, go back to the early 2011, 2012, whenever Jimmy Guinness looked this in with Donegal, Dublin struggled with it big time, but they said now come towards the end of the fourth, fifth All Ireland, they found it very easy to play against. You know, because players were dropping off and they were fit to pick holes and pick gaps within squads and get the proper players on the ball that needed to get on the ball to pick teams off inside the scoring zone.
Yeah, Tyrone obviously played Donegal. That's the other big game on TV. We're really spoiled for choice. Like, I mean, you have Mayo versus Galway and you have Donegal versus Tyrone, like two great rivalries. Donegal and Tyrone is an interesting one because they're playing in 2 weeks in the championship. Like, surely there's shadow boxing going to happen here.
Don't think so. Like, both teams will want to win. It boils back down to that there. You have very limited time to get ready for your championship match. You have a 3 week window here from this weekend inwards till that championship match happens, and I would imagine both teams will be going as full strength as they can at the weekend to get players playing together, get that understanding again of how they want to play, how they want to set up, and have that cohesion within the whole squad and run them patterns that they had running way back last February and March, and trying to get that up to scratch for the start of the championship in November.
Yeah, so Conor McKenna's back for Tyrone. Colin McShane is out. Colin Cavan is out. So there's some good news and some bad news. Do you know much about Conor McKenna? Like, I mean, and we know it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get back into it. But for me, there's just something about Conor McKenna, has a little bit about him. I think he'll be straight back in.
Yeah, look, I honestly don't know too much about the fella, but from watching clips of him in the AFL, you know, he still had that style, that Gaelic style approach to his AFL game. And obviously it will take him time to adapt back into the round football and Gaelic games. But I do believe that, you know, if he shows any form at all in the Tyrone setup, that he'll be an automatic starter for them.
Yeah.
And with his pace, you know, it's going to be beneficial for them coming into the winter months.
Definitely will. Oisín Gallen is back for Donegal. Jason McGee and Paddy McGrath, all probably who would have missed the championship had it gone, along the summer months as usual. Here's a question for you, because Tyrone traditionally has favoured a more defensive style coming out of it now. Donegal, I think, are tactically probably the most flexible team in the country in that they could take Kerry on, for example, in Croke Park in a very open game, or they could surprise Tyrone in the championship, you know, the year after in Kingspan Breithney Park by going a lot more defensive and playing a counter-attack game. Will winter football suit a defensive game plan? I'm trying to think of a more attacking kick pass oriented game plan, like maybe Armagh have, you know, in slippery, mucky conditions, the ball not going to hand, easy turnovers. Is the safer system in a winter championship a more conservative one?
Yeah, look, you know, it's I think every team has become more flexible, and you know, they want to play an expansive brand of football, and obviously, you know, they'll get back and defend the numbers as well. But I think over the winter months it's all going to depend on weather. Every pitch, you know, that these teams are going to be playing on are going to be in a decent condition, good surface. You know, if it's a wet, windy night, obviously your mindset will have to change to a running game, keeping the ball through the hands. Where if it's a calm, fresh evening, you know, obviously you'll be able to play a more expansive brand of football. But, you know, we're coming into that time of year where it's most likely going to be wet and windy. And I think that will have a big say in championships is having a good place kicker, and you know, has been having that, getting up into that 90% bracket on your scoreboard free kicks.
Yeah, well, one team that does have a good place kicker is Dublin. They're all over the place, right? Because poor Desi Farrell started in late November because Jim Gavin, you know, resigned very late. He played a few league games and then he's out in the cold in the lockdown like every other county. Then he's back. Dublin Club Championship didn't finish until recently, and now he's only got his squad together for what's facing into a very, very hectic schedule. I see Mark O'Shea hinting at Dublin potentially getting caught this year. Kieran Donaghy the same, you know, the Kerry boys maybe wanting to get that out there. Where do you see Dublin? Like, I mean, I would have to be on the side that with Croke Park empty, Dublin with a new management team, him trying to bring his own ideas in there, maybe personnel, that if they don't get caught this year, we could be looking at a 10 in a row.
Yeah, look, you know, obviously it's going to be a tough couple of weeks and tough couple of months for Dazzy because of the 7-month lockdown there. You know, he would have been like to get in early after Jim departed to stamp his own authority and take his own ideas to the table. You know, but the longer that festered, you know, the more these boys have been set in a real rigid and disciplined approach from Jim Galvin that got them to 5 in a row. And I think it'll be hard to change them boys and get them out of that zone or that comfort zone that they have been in this last 6 year or the last 5 years underneath Jim. And with Desi trying to change that and put his own style of things, that it could be a lot of teething problems over the next number of weeks and months.
Yeah,
For this Dublin side.
Well, like, I mean, obviously Jack McCaffrey has retired. They've won an All-Ireland without him. Tyr McConnelly has retired. They've won an All-Ireland without him. Like, I mean, you know, Rory O'Carroll has gone away. They've won an All-Ireland without him. And he was a regular before he went away. Like, nothing seems to really faze them. Well, obviously the last 5 years, nothing fazed them. Again, you know, whether it starts to faze them now under new management, only time will tell.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, a lot of things will boil down to, you know, these players that have won 5 in a row, you know, where their heads at after 7 months out of this environment. I know they've all went back and played club football, and, you know, from watching some of the Dublin Club Championship matches, some of them have played really well, but, you know, you also had, you know, some players that were struggling at times within that club championship season. And, you know, and you've got to question, you know, will their motivation be as high as it was back last February and March time?
Yeah, I suppose with everything going on. What about the empty Croke Park? How do you think that will be a factor?
I don't think it'll have a major factor, to be honest, on the Dublin squad. Look, it's a game of football at the end of the day. You know, whether there's 20 people at it or 80,000, yes, obviously there's a different dynamic on that occasion, but, you know, we all love playing football. You're in that environment. That's what you want to do. And I think when you're in Croke Park, it wouldn't matter if there's 80,000 or 20,000 there. It's the best playing facilities in Ireland and maybe the world. And each player will go out there and want to express themselves and want to play to their best.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll leave it there, Kieran, and we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll have a look at the other three divisions.
He gave me back then was we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, "You won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me." I said, "All right, well, okay."
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was for you.
All right, so Division 2, and we know, listen, this is one thing I did remember, probably because Leash are in it, that this is the most exciting division in the whole league. Maybe Division 4 might have something to say about that. Every team outside of Fermanagh has still a chance of getting promoted, which is absolutely incredible, really. Armagh, Roscommon are in the driving seat. Armagh probably more than anybody else in the driving seat, because Roscommon have to go away to Armagh and also have to go away to Cavan in the last two games. So Roscommon are in second place, but, you know, like, they could find themselves in fifth place, Kieran, by the time this league ends.
Yeah, look, it's a really tight league, you know, and has been from day one. Like, you know, obviously, at one point we thought Armagh was going to run away with it and then suffered a defeat down in Leash, which isn't a happy hunting ground for us.
No.
in numerous times, you know, obviously playing against Leash, and, you know, and obviously Roscommon chinned us there a couple of years ago in the qualifying stage. Just, you know, so, you know, it's all to play for, and, you know, there's a number of teams there that will see themselves in a really good position to get promoted. And, you know, there's a massive match in the Athletic Grounds on Saturday evening, one that from an Armagh perspective and an Armagh supporter, is that one that we're really looking forward to and sitting at home and watching on the telly.
What have you ever wondered about where this bogey team for Armagh being Laois has come from? I even remember the year Armagh won the All-Ireland. We beat Armagh that year in Croke Park in the league semi-final. Like, I mean, I don't know what's going on. And it's actually ramped up even more in recent years as Armagh have actually become a much obviously, you know, more talented team than Laois, but still can't seem to beat them.
I don't know what it is.
but it's pissing me off, says you.
Yeah, definitely. But you know, we'll turn that tide someday.
Someday, yeah. Once you do once, maybe you'll keep doing it. So how are Armagh shaping up? How long are they back? There was a bit of a COVID issue within the squad. Are Armagh in the clear of that now and training away?
Yeah, by all accounts, all the boys that were obviously safe isolating over this past 14 days, we're back at training over the weekend there and gearing themselves towards the Roscommon match at the weekend. You know, so chatting to this, obviously I met Geezer yesterday for a coffee to go through some stuff regards on the 17s and just have a general chat to them. And, you know, he says the boys are in a good place and really looking forward to the weekend.
Right, Armagh, like the league, getting promoted from the league is pretty important, Armagh. It would be fair to say that.
Yeah, obviously that's our ultimate goal. I'd imagine from the squad's perspective that, you know, you want to be playing Division One football, and the more you're exposing yourself to that division, the more chances you have of competing at a championship level and progress into the latter stages of the championship, whether the Super 8s come back in or quarterfinals or the last four. And to get to that stage of the championship, you've got to be consistently playing at Division One football, I think.
Yeah, there's some fairly difficult decisions for Geezer to make on the Armagh team. Like, I mean, the full forward line is the obvious one. Midfield, he's got loads of options as well. Like, Oisín O'Neill had a brilliant club championship. You know, he's pushing on. You've got Grimley, you've Jarlath O'Byrnes. You know, you have these fellas. Full forward line then, you know, you have an awful lot of really good full fellas who can play on the full forward line. The big thing for Geezer is getting the balance right, I suppose, across the team.
Yeah, obviously he'll have headaches leading into this week, you know, but something that I think Kieran has been very good at over this past 2 years is that he's starting to pick players based on form and training.
Right.
I know in my latter stages of my career, he threatened that, but he probably didn't go through that. He stuck with the tried and reliable players. And, you know, and that probably didn't serve him because a lot of us were coming to the end of our day and weren't performing at the level that we should have been. And now he's gone to that mode that if you're performing in training and performing well, that you're going to get your chance. And I think that has filtered through the squad and has kept everybody on their toes.
But I absolutely love that. I don't know about you, but like, I mean, think of what the A versus B game would be like if you knew on the B team that if I play well here, I'm going to get on. I remember being on like both the A and the B team down through the years with Laois, and the B team, you'd be demoralised because you'd know the team is practically picked. And like, I mean, no matter what I do here is not really going to make a difference. You could imagine the B team with their tails up like an underdog coming into a county final thinking that if I play well here, I'm getting on the team. For a healthy squad, it's by far the best route to go down.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and he's took that approach in this past 2 years and it has served the squad well and obviously him well, you know, because, you know, it's giving players incentive, it's giving them appetite, and they know that if they're producing the goods at training that they're a fair chance that they'll get an opportunity at the weekend to play in the National League or play come championship time.
Yeah, I think it was Dublin kind of started that. Kerry did it a lot under Eamon Fitzmaurice, definitely. And, like, I mean, you'd imagine that every county will be doing it if they're not. Then the flip side of that now is, say the fella that always plays well in training but doesn't just like that big day with the crowd. You know those kind of, and you probably know a few down through the years in Armagh. I know fellas who, geez, do it could be torturous to mark in training, but they've had loads of chances come championship and they haven't taken it. Do you know, like, I mean, I suppose you just use your own your own local knowledge and instinct for the stuff like that.
Yeah, you have to use your past experience in these scenarios.
Yeah, so if you're going well in training, I'm picking you on Sunday, unless you've let me down the last 3 years. But then it doesn't matter. the other big game in Division Two is Kildare and Cavan. What do you make of this Kildare thing? Now, I think these fellas are still they've been picked on the panel anyway. Fergal Conway, Kevin Flynn, Mick O'Grady, Paddy Brophy. They were named as part of the squad last week. They dropped off the panel because they felt that they got a really raw deal in the county semi-final. It was Selbridge against Moorfield, and apparently the referee rode them, so they were threatening to drop off the squad. I don't know. Like, what do you think of this? Like, I mean, just because a referee rode you, does it mean that the county squad suffers? Now, I don't want to go down the road of criticising them too much, because it looks like they might actually be in on the squad now.
Yeah, look, it's a tricky situation for Jack O'Connor as Kildare manager, and obviously a tricky one for the Kildare County Board. But at the end of the day, it's neither Jack O'Connor's fault or the Kildare County Board's fault or your current teammates in the Kildare panel's fault that a referee maybe give a couple of dodgy decisions against you. And you know. And obviously, I'd say it was probably just a heat of the moment thing after the game, and maybe listening to people from outside environments that probably prompted them players to go one way, and then maybe when the dust settled, the players had a change of heart and change of mind and rejoin the squad again, which would be the right thing to do.
Yeah, because they are important players. The four of them are all starters, so Jack O'Connor would be fairly pissed off. Kildare have only got 4 points, but they've two home games left. They've Westmead, at home, and they've Cavan at home. So arguably they could be up on 8 points right in the mix, you know, after such a terrible start. But arguably, knowing Kildare, they might not be either.
Yeah, look, obviously. Garmad played Kildare in their second league match this year, you know, in the Athletic Grounds, and you know, there's a lot of hype coming to it, and you know, a lot of expectation coming with this Kildare squad with Jack O'Connor involved, and you know, it's very disappointing in them on that night. Armagh beat them quite easily, and you know, so they have a lot of work to do over the next number of weeks and months leading into the championship in the Leinster campaign.
Yeah, Fermanagh have 2 points. Now, they're not relegated, but geez, they're being put in a very, very difficult position. So they've 10 positive cases and they've 7 other players are self-isolating. So they will be out of self-isolation on the day of the Clare game, but they'll have absolutely nothing done. Where are you on this? Do you think this is fair? Like, the GAA last night, the news came that they wouldn't accept the game being postponed. So the game is going ahead. For me, it looks very, very harsh on Fermanagh, because this isn't just a run of the mill league game. This is arguably a relegation match.
Yeah, look, you know, I think it boils back down to this word, common sense. You know, that we seem to neglect a lot in GAA terms when it comes to these situations. You know, I think both Fermanagh and Clare had agreed to maybe refix the match for a midweek at a neutral venue, and by all accounts Croke Park haven't agreed to that, and I think that's unfair that if both counties agreed to it, that Croke Park should be fit to accommodate it and give the players the best opportunity to perform at that level and chance to either keep themselves in the league or put themselves in the promotion stakes.
Because if Fermanagh lose this one, the reality is that, you know, Clare will be up to 6 points. If Kildare win, they could be relegated by losing this match. And yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, there is a common sense element here. And I do kind of get the GAA's side of it to some extent, because it'll set a precedent of a team being allowed to pull out because of, you know, positive tests, where the championship is just, you know, all the games are on top of each other and they can't, you know, have that kind of disruption. So maybe, you know, is that the kind of way they're looking at it if the precedent is set so early? Now, geez, it's a relegation match and they're down 70 players. I would be more on your line. Let it be rescheduled for some time that the two teams agree. But maybe the GAA just don't want to open up a can of worms that they won't be able to close come championship.
Yeah. You know, obviously there is that element that, you know, people could be saying, you know, Racing's pulling the fly in here because they're sitting bottom of the league and you know, they don't want to play this game. But obviously you've got to take each thing at its merit. You know, if they have 10 positive cases and seven players in isolation, you know, the common sense is that, you know, give this team the best opportunity to go and perform and play the remaining two leagues that mean so much to them, the way the leagues are, the championship is going to be split next year.
Yeah, that's another layer on it, yeah.
And the right thing is that if, you know, Fermanagh and Clare both agree to play this match midweek on a Wednesday or Thursday night somewhere down the country, that get a facility that would facilitate it and play the game.
Yeah, well, that's it, I suppose. And they're talking about putting out their under-20 team. Like, putting out their under-20 team, getting relegated to Division 3, going into the Tailteann Cup next year. There's too much riding on this, you know, for Fermanagh to not allow them at least have a fighting chance to stay in the division. So, like, I mean, I do think that would be the fair thing to do. But look, it's been ruled on now, so there's not too much anyone can do about it. Division 3 recap. This is probably the most boring division if we're talking about excitement, because Cork have it won. We know who the winners are. And if we're being honest, Down and Longford both have 7 points. But for me, it's Down and Cork, you know, that's going to go up here. There might be a little bit more excitement on who could potentially go down.
Yeah, look, you know, it looks like the two front runners there are Down, and our Cork's obviously been promoted and Down coming up a second. Obviously, see Down was hit with a double blow today with Darren O'Hagan and Conroy Harrison that aren't available for the rest of their league or championship. So they'll be two big misses for Down, especially in this home straight, these last two league matches. And I think they've another two players currently in isolation from COVID cases. So, you know, that could hamper their progression of maybe putting a stint of coming up second in this league.
Right. What happened to two boys? Are they injuries?
Yeah, as far as I know, that Darren obviously has been carrying an injury the whole way through the club championship and Down, and it's something that he needs to address and probably needs a slight operation on by all accounts. And you know, Conroy has probably been floating into the Down squad this past number of years. He's jumping between back London, but work and stuff like that there, so probably has opted out. So it probably just puts a wee dampener on maybe them progressing out of that division maybe over the next number of weeks.
Right. What's your impression of Down football having managed in it? Like, is everybody in the county committing to the county squad? Is that an issue within Down, or have the standards of the county team just kind of slipped a little bit?
No, like, you know, it's a case of, you know, obviously you have Tuku that has a juggernaut in Down football. You know, the way Cross and Glen had an Armagh for a number of years.
Yeah.
And it's a case of every club getting to that level and trying to bridge the gap. And I think the more clubs that do that, the more competitive Down Club Championship will come, and the stronger Down County football will be. And we've probably seen that in Armagh over the last number of years, that, you know, teams started to realise that they've got to train at the level that Cross and Glen was training at and do that bit extra. And when that happened, you know, obviously other teams started to win championships in Armagh, and it gave more clubs a bit of incentive, and it made our county club football stronger, and obviously made the Armagh county team a lot stronger on the flip side of that as well.
Yeah, in case anyone from Longford is a little bit pissed off with me, the reason I think Down are going to do it, they've Leitrim at home and Louth left, and they've beaten Longford. So if it comes down to a head-to-head, even if Longford win their last two games and Down win their last two games, well, then Down, you know, will go up, which is, again, like Division 2 relegations, Division 3 promotions are just as important to be not playing in that Tailteann Cup. Tipperary, interestingly, are in big trouble. They're only on 3 points. They're a team that were, you know, knocking on the door of the top teams, were in Division 2 doing pretty well 2 years ago, and then found themselves in Division 3 and now in trouble for actually staying up. They're at home to Offaly, who are 2 points ahead of them this weekend. And then next week they're away to Leitrim. So you could have a situation, Louth are relegated. It's between Leitrim, Tipperary, probably Offaly. Derry could be dragged in there if they lose to Longford this weekend as well.
Yeah, look, you know, the bottom of that division is tight. You know, obviously Louth are gone, and you have Leitrim, Tipperary, Offaly and Derry on that there. And, you know, Longford will still have that ambitions of going up. They have been knocking on the door this past couple of years. So they'll be going with the incentive that if they beat Derry at the weekend, and hopefully Leitrim, you know, possibly get a result of some departure against Down and Louth maybe over the next number of weeks, that'll lead them in a good place to give themselves the chance to get promotion.
Cork,
but yes,
Go on.
Yes, Tipperary, you know, probably had been knocking on the door of Division 2, Division 3 this past number of years and had really good runs in recent championships that have really hit a wee bit of a dip in form there with a new change of manager and are looking in trouble at the bottom of that division as well.
Yeah, Quinlivan is back for them anyways, which is a big plus. He was going to miss the year as well, but with the whole situation, the pandemic and everything, he's going to be home, which is massive. Colin O'Riordan, we were talking on the show last week, he might have been given permission to play with them, but that's been denied since, which is a, you know, is going to be a big loss. Cork are in the best position out of any team probably in the whole country in that it looks like they have it wrapped up. On paper, technically they don't, but they do. They've Louth at home left. They have Longford away. They are building a very, very strong squad. They have under-21s, one in All-Ireland coming in. Kieran Sheehan is he's injured. He's going to miss the championship. But they're in a position now where they arguably have a month into this Kerry game. Do you know where Kerry probably have two, you know, pretty tough games in the league to kind of build into that? Well, you could actually argue that Kerry, you know, aren't in a bad position. But Cork have the best lead into the championship out of any team from a preparation point of view, would you say?
Yeah, look, they're in a really strong position. And Cork football shouldn't be in Division 3. Like, you know, they should be at the top table and consistently there and dying to win Munster championships and pushing to win All-Irelands. But they're in a really strong position now to take that leap into Division 2 and leave themselves in a good stead for the Munster Championship and the All-Ireland series in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Keane O'Neill, Keane O'Neill is in with them and he's definitely, I don't know about you, but for the last 10 years I've always thought Cork were a very confused team. The game was changing and they didn't really know how to change with it. Do you know, did you ever get that impression from them?
Yeah, something that, you know, we've probably played against in the past number of years as well, dropping up between 2 and 3. You know, they were big, they were athletic, but as you said, they found it very hard to adapt to the modern game, the way it has been played over this past 4 or 5 years. And it was a lot easier. It was easy to pick them off because they left themselves a lot of the time 1v1 at the back and with good forwards that you were able to cause them plenty of trouble.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think Keane O'Neill has brought maybe that, I don't know, a bit of tactical know-how that they didn't have. And there was a whole talk last year about how they had a players' meeting mid-year and they were playing a more defensive style, which didn't suit them. And then they had this players' meeting and then they started playing a lot more expansively in the championship and had a good championship. I don't know, did you hear that narrative going on? But I had Mark Collins on the show last week and he said that's all a load of that never happened. So I don't know what to think. I think they were just going really badly in the league. And they had, you know, they had a discussion about things, not to change tactics or anything, but, you know, it just so happened that after the meeting they started winning and people started saying they started playing differently when they didn't really.
Yeah, it's always the way, like, you know, especially for the underage success they've had there in recent times as well. Like, you know, they've quality players throughout their squad. And as you said, it's probably just having that wee bit of structure and know-how that maybe Keane O'Neill has stuck to the table in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it definitely is. Division 4, arguably the most exciting division as well. Limerick on around 8 points, Antrim 7, Wexford 6, Wicklow 6, Sligo 6. So there you are, 2 points between the first 5 teams. Like, incredible stuff. Probably not a lot riding on it as regards, the, you know, tier one or tier two. But obviously, you're climbing the ladder to get out of the tier two by winning it. Interestingly, Wicklow play Antrim this weekend at home. They're two of the that's the team on 7, Antrim versus 6, Wicklow. And Limerick are at home to Wexford. So that is Limerick on 8 against Wexford at 6. So next week, we'll know a lot more. At the moment, Division 4 is completely wide open. This time next week, because of those 2 games, we will start to see, we'll either start to see, you know, obvious winners, or it could get even more complicated if Wexford beat Limerick and Wicklow beat Antrim.
Yeah, look, you know, just looking at Antrim and what has occurred there this week and down this direction is, you know, they've got to go ahead to build Casement Park again.
Oh, yeah.
And that will give the people of Antrim a lift. It'll give their county squad a lift, you know, because it means a lot to Belfast and it means a lot to the Antrim people. And they'll see that as an incentive, you know, to start climbing divisions over the next couple of years. to get back playing at a high level in Casement Park again. You know, and traditionally, Anthem are really good underage teams at minor level and under 20 levels, you know, and it's just they need to start bringing that across to senior level. And, you know, they've got a big Gael Fest thing there going at the minute for the next 3 years. There's a lot of work being done, and they'll see all this as momentum over the next week or two. And, you know, I won't be surprised that if Antrim get the win at the weekend and leave themselves in a really good position to get back in Division 3.
So will Casement Park then be the county or be the provincial headquarters then, and Clonus will be a ghost town come Ulster final day?
It's hard to know. I'd say a lot of it will boil down to what teams is competing in the Ulster finals.
Right.
You know, Ulster Council will probably use that as their two main venues for provincial final days, you know, and obviously it'll determine on what two teams is in the provincial finals, where they'll take the matches, I would imagine. But you just wouldn't know what would happen.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. But yeah, I suppose like Munster, there could be, depending who's in it, it would dictate where it's going to be. What did you make of Paul Galvin leaving Wexford?
Look, you know, I was really looking forward to watching Paul's progress this year with Wexford. I think he's an interesting character. I would imagine he's a really good manager and coach. And it was something that I was looking forward to following his progress and seeing how he's going. And my own woman, she's from Wexford. And I'd be travelling up and down there a right bit. And I was thinking of maybe contacting him and maybe dropping in to see what could I drop in to watch a couple of the sessions when I'm down that direction. But, you know, obviously he's left and... I think he had Wexford going really well. He had a difficult start, obviously, with personnel leaving the squad and maybe not liking his methods. But once he got that out of the system, you know, they're starting to show a bit of progress, and it'll be interesting to see how they recover now over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and by all accounts, playing a pretty direct, like similar to an Armagh style of football, which I know because Paul Galvin was a pundit for me here for 1 or 2 years, and that was his philosophy. It was a lot of kick, you know, pretty much the carry way is using the foot a lot more than the hand.
Yeah, you know, and they were showing progression in Division 4 League, and it was a team that I was really looking forward to watching and obviously monitoring Paul's progress with them.
What did you make of his theory on, he spoke, Bernard Brogan was speaking about this recently, he was talking to the London squad, and he said, hands up, how many of you own a bag of balls? Or hands up who has two pairs of boots or whatever, and they all put up their hands. Hands up who owns a bag of balls? And none of them put up their hand. And he says, do you think you're supposed to be serious inter-county players if you don't have a bag of balls and you don't practice what is the most important part of the game, you know, every day? And it would get you thinking a bit. I know a bag of balls could cost £400 or £500, but at the same time, you don't need a bag of them. You just need maybe one or two and kick a pint from one side and then come the other side and maybe kick one from the other side. That a lot of the time I was speaking to the lads on the show here on Monday about this, is that whenever you think of training on your own, I don't know about you, but it's either weights or it's running a 5 kilometres. When you're training on your own, you very rarely think of, I'll go with the ball, if you're not a free taker.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, you know, it's, you know, you can't beat skills, and having that skill execution and replicating that week in, week day out, you know, it's a big part of our game. It was having a good skill set and being able to kick off right and left foot, be able to hand pass off right and left. And, you know, if you get the opportunity to score, it's being able to capitalise on that there. And, you know, I'd say that's not just in London. I'd say that could be throughout the whole of Ireland, that there'd be very, very small majority of players that would own 4 or 5 footballs.
Yeah.
Not alone a bag, own one maybe.
Exactly. But do you find, say, with the Armagh under 17s, and one thing always stuck out with me when James Horan took over Mayo in 2011, he got them back to a lot of basics, like practicing off their left foot, practicing off, hand passing off their weak hands, something I never did. I did practice off my weak foot and got it decent, but I was 24. Like, it's crazy stuff. Do you see Armagh under 17s landing into you with no weaker foot, not hand passing off the other one, you know, with some basic skills of the game not having been kind of, I don't know, forced on them maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, obviously you have some players coming in with exceptional skill development, like, you know, and obviously you have some players that's coming in that aren't as comfortable on their non-dominant side as they would be on their strong side, you know, and obviously that's our job as a under 17 management team is to develop that and enhance that and ultimately get them ready for inter-county football over the next number of years.
But would you say, for example, so I know Geezer has a holistic approach to Armagh football. Would he talk to you and say, right, how many of them can't go off the left foot? And then he'd go down the chain to the 16s, to the 15s, to the 14s and go, what are you doing with them? Do you know what I mean? Would there be that kind of a joined up kind of thinking going on rather than get them to 17 without... I'm not just using Armagh as an example. This is an example for every county in the country.
Yeah, look, there's that whole thought process at the present minute in the Armagh Academy squads. You know, we have obviously Geezer's at the head of the seniors and everything filters down through from him, like, you know, towards the under-20s, under-17s. And then we have Aidan O'Rourke and Paul McGrain involved in the academy squads as well, and we try to all work in tandem and try to develop at each level that then it's a progression, the next level, progress again, and ultimately leave them in a really good position that they're fit to come in to step in the senior level, and they've all hopefully the boxes ticked.
Right, that's impressive. You've McGrain and O'Rourke in with the academy.
Yeah, the two boys would do a lot of hands-on and oversee a lot of the stuff within our academy setup and roll that out to the coaches that are over the teams.
Okay, very good. Right, come here, we'll leave it there and we'll have more to see what happens, I suppose, after this weekend. It's like today's been more of a revision of where the hell we're at with each division. And looking forward, listen, you're under restrictions up there in Ulster, aren't you? So, like, I mean, you have 6 games to watch this weekend, so we won't feel too sorry for you.
No, I actually don't know what restriction we're in at the minute. It's chopping and changing that much, but you know, the only light that we have is that we're still allowed to play a sport and long may that continue.
Yeah, exactly, and talk about it. Kieran, thanks very much, mate.
Good man, Colin, thank you.
All right, great stuff. We'll be back on Monday. Keane Ward is back and we'll review the games from the weekend, the ones that were on television. I'm sure that's what the ones we'll focus on. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.